From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour is made in an old English fairy tale. There once was a gentleman who said to his daughter, "How much do you love me, my dear?" "Why," she said, "Father, I love you as fresh meat loves salt." Perhaps an odd comment, but one meant with love. But her father was furious. He didn't understand, and he sent her away. She thought she might never see him again. On the day of her wedding, she ordered the cook to prepare all the meat with no salt because her father had agreed to attend. Now, all the guests found the meat so tasteless they couldn't eat it. But her father burst out crying, saying that now he could see. "I thought she didn't love me," he said. "But now I see that meat loves salt, and I see that she loved me best of all." And they were happy ever after. Well, you know who else loves salt? New York taxpayers, probably. And the recent federal tax bill cuts the salt. We are talking about salt, state and local taxes. And you might have heard that the recent federal bill will impact higher taxed states and might lead to higher taxes for some. But for whom? This hour, we're going to talk about salt, but we're also going to try to answer your questions broadly about how your taxes could be changing. My guests could form a rock band called the Four CPAs, the most CPAs we've ever had in a room, or perhaps Burton and the Spears. But let's have a conversation with them now. Bert Spear is a CPA and tax partner at Mengel Metzger Bar. Bert, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Kevin Woodworth is a CPA and manager at DeJoy, Knopf & Blood. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Sean O'Brien, CPA, MBA, and consultant at Roberts Accounting. Sean, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
And Doug Smith, CPA, MBA at Young & Company CPAs. Doug, welcome to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Bert, since we have had a little fun with Bert and the Spears here, I was saying before the program began, it's a little bit dry, and they all looked at me and said, "Dry to whom?" but this is important stuff, and I know that there's some confusion. You know, when you read some comments from different lawmakers, some people might think this is going to impact a lot of people. Tom Reed put out a statement saying that the bill maintains state and local deductions at $10,000, and we're going to talk about what that means in a second. But Reed says, the congressman says, 99% of taxpayers here in Western New York are not going to be impacted. But Brian Kolb, longtime New York State Assemblyman, says for high earners and people paying high property taxes, a reduced salt deduction will present a serious challenge. The fear is that this might be the final straw that sends them to greener, less expensive pastures, maybe moving out of state. Other analyses have talked about this being sort of a marriage penalty kind of a bill, and people who don't have children would be impacted more. So there's a lot to work through. Let's start with this, Bert. Let's explain what salt is. We'll go around the room, make sure people understand what salt is and what might be changing.
Okay, well, salt generally is being referred to, as you said, state and local taxes. We're talking primarily state income tax as well as real estate taxes. A number of years ago, been doing this for a long time, sales taxes used to be in there, but that's something they took away a long time ago. So we're now just down to the two primary taxes being income tax and real estate taxes.
And it's referred to because it becomes part of deductions for New Yorkers, right?
Right. So under the law as it existed, you were allowed an unlimited deduction for your state and local taxes as an itemized deduction. So it really only applied to people who itemized their deductions. If you took a standard deduction, you really got no additional benefit for it. It was kind of baked into the formula to come up with the standard deduction.
Okay. Doug, is this really for high earners only to be concerned about?
Well, it really depends on who you are, where you live. For example, I happen to live just outside of Powder Mill Park, and so my property taxes are well over half the, over half the $10,000. So from that standpoint, it really, you know, it probably will impact people who itemize, if they're still going to itemize with the $24,000. Standard deduction.
All right. So, Kevin, when we talk about the change in, I think, $20,000 to $10,000, outline for the listeners what exactly we're talking about there.
So in terms of the $10,000 that you can take for state and local income taxes and real estate taxes, as Doug mentioned, there is going to be an increase in the standard deduction going forward. So for married taxpayers, that's going to go up to $24,000. For single taxpayers, that's $12,000. So what that'll mean for a lot of married couples is that they'll take the standard deduction going forward. So that $10,000, to your question, it will impact very high income earners because they're going to be losing a lot of those taxes that they used to get as a deduction.
Okay. And Sean, when it comes to whether this will impact, New Yorkers in a way that would make people actually pay higher taxes than a year ago. Could we be actually at that threshold where, because of the way this bill is written right now, assuming no other changes at the state level, some New Yorkers will pay more?
That could very well be the case. I think that, unfortunately, it's going to be a case-by-case situation. This is going to knock a lot of people out of actually itemizing their deductions, but the tax brackets also shrunk. So where they take away in the beginning, they might give back in the end. So it's difficult to tell, but as far as the expectation of people itemizing, there's going to be a significantly less amount of people doing that.
All right, listeners, if you've got questions about your taxes and what changes there are, or just in general, this is a great time to get those answers, and you can call the program. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. And as we mentioned, SALT may impact higher earners, but I know everybody's got questions about what is going to be changing for their own taxes. So a great time to do it. 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Or you can email the program, connections@wxxi.org. You can find me on Twitter at Evan Dawson or producer Megan Mack at MMAC Media. So this is a good chance to get questions answered. When it comes to having children and who will be paying more or less, let me kind of go around the room and get a sense here. So Bert, people, your clients come in and they say, look, we're a childless couple. Does this mean that we are at a disadvantage based on this bill?
I'm going to follow Sean's answer there. It depends. It's an individual type of thing. What happened is in addition to getting rid of some of the itemized deductions, they eliminated the personal exemptions. So people used to have an exemption for themselves, their spouse, and their kids, each one of those. They've eliminated all of those, but they doubled the size of the standard deduction. The two of those things with the lowering of the rates, for some people they'll be winners, some people will be losers, but they also increased the child care credit for children under 17 and made most of it refundable. So if you've got kids under 17, you're probably better off. Again, it's an individual case-by-case basis. If you have three kids ages 18, 19, and 20 in college and such, you're probably going to be hurt by this.
Yeah, let's come up with, I'm sure the answer is always it depends. Because there's so many variables, I get that. But it's probably not hard to envision scenarios where, who are the people least at an advantage with the bill? And CNN Money did that. They asked who's going to pay more under the new rules. And let me go ahead and read from some of what they had to say. They said, quote, for example, a middle class couple with no children who itemized last year won't see much change in their tax bill and could potentially pay more. This is the result of the loss of the personal exemptions and limitations of the SALT deduction. Since they do not have children, they would not benefit from the expanded child credit, said to have been designed to offset the loss of the exemptions. A middle-class family that itemized in 2017, mostly due to their SALT deductions, also won't experience much of a tax cut, if any, the analyst that CNN talked to added. And they said cash-strapped homeowners could also get pinched. So, Bert, we're not just talking about high-income people at this point. I mean, there could be scenarios where middle-class don't see much of a benefit. Is that correct?
That's correct. And, in fact, in that article, they're looking at the country as a whole. And as a result, those generalizations are going to hold true. However, in New York State, especially in Monroe County, where we have high real estate taxes, our income tax rate, although it's not the highest in the country, is still, I think, the eighth highest. It's fairly high.
It's in the top 10, yep.
So when you have those two factors together, the loss of those, a good portion of that is itemized deductions, is going to impact people in New York State to a greater degree than the nation as a whole.
Doug, when you've got clients who say, look, let's pretend for a second I know nothing about taxes. Am I going to pay more or less under the new federal tax bill? I know it depends, but are most people going to be paying less? Are most people going to be seeing more back?
Certainly people that have children under the age of 17. That child tax credit is now doubling from $1,000 to $2,000. Up to $1,300 of it is what they call refundable, which means even if you don't have a tax liability, you can get the money back. So from that standpoint, those people will really see the biggest advantage. If you have, you don't get exemptions for actually yourself and your spouse if you're filing jointly. There also is another $500 credit for dependents that are not under the age of 17. So that kind of offsets a little bit as far as that's concerned.
Is this new setup under the federal tax bill making taxes more or less complex, Doug?
Some areas, in some areas it's going to be easier if you're a person that's got one W-2 and maybe previously you lived in New York State, so you itemized because of our state taxes. And actually, I'd like to dispute it. The Tax Foundation did a study and we were ranked number one based on percentage of income.
Highest tax state?
Highest tax state. So from that, and that was about a year or so ago. So it's fairly recent data.
Who's disputing that? I mean, like, we're always one,
well,
two,
I understand.
Or three.
We're always one, two, or three. And actually, I was kind of surprised how far down the list both Minnesota and California were when you consider those are usually the three that are named as the top three.
But you're saying we're still number one?
We're still number one.
Okay. So, Kevin, for you, more complex or less complex?
The common answer is going to be it depends. But I think from an individual perspective, there's going to be, I will say in some areas it will be more simple because they're going to be, a lot more people will be taking the standard deduction. But I do want to talk about one thing about kind of the complexity is, and we haven't mentioned yet, is the alternative minimum tax. Because you're asking, are people going to pay less or more tax? Mm-hmm. And that's a big factor because in the past, if we had a taxpayer that was subject to the AMT, all those taxes get added back for that purpose. And as a result, they weren't really getting any benefit for those taxes paid. So there's certain circumstances here. If you look at a taxpayer from 17 to 18, they could be paying a fair amount less in tax in 18 because of the AMT issues. So that's something to consider as well.
Okay. Sean, agree with that? What other advice would you have, sort of piggybacking on Kevin's point there, for people to understand?
Sure, yeah. So the AMT exemption actually went up. So I agree with Kevin. I think that a lot of times for the itemized deductions, where it comes into play is, you know, obviously the state and the property taxes, they would actually get added back when you're looking at alternative minimum tax. Well, that exemption has gone up. And what alternative minimum tax does is basically say, hey, we realize that you calculated your taxes in a certain way, but here's a different formula that you have to use. And if this number is higher, that's the number you're ultimately going to pay taxes on. So what they've done is they've increased that. And one of the things that I think a good concept to talk about, too, is that with the standard deductions, they're actually going to be indexed for inflation, but all of the individual changes that we're seeing has a sunset provision, December 31st, 2025. So unless they continue to exist, they will all go away. So it's fairly interesting.
Yeah. Okay. That's certainly helpful because a lot of what was talked about with this bill is this notion of sort of a finite shelf life for parts of it, but not all of it. Doug, go ahead.
Well, that was the point I was going to make is I think the business tax part of it is a permanent change. It's not due to sunset in 2025. So
that part could have been made a little easier to make everything permanent, right?
Talk to your lawmakers.
Yeah. I know you guys don't make the laws. I do understand that.
That it was a result of the process of reconciliation they went through is that they had to have a certain number that they were trying to reach. And if they continued the individual tax breaks longer, they couldn't have reached that number. So it was sort of the process used to pass the bill of reconciliation caused that, although they could have flipped it and made the corporate side expire and have the individual permanent.
All right, so I've got a couple questions already that have come in via email. Let me get to those, and I'll tell our listeners again, if you want to call or email the program with questions, comments about your taxes, are you expecting to pay more or less? Do you have questions about how it works or what you should expect on your tax bill? It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. connections at WXXI.org. Christy writes to the program, and I'll open up to all four of the CPAs who are here. She says, if we have more people taking the standard deduction, should nonprofits be concerned that fewer people will be making charitable donations? Do we have any expectation that that would be true?
Yes. There's quite a bit of concern in the nonprofit community, among my clients, among the entire industry that I've seen, that are there worried that people will not donate as much. Historically, that's not true. They find that people tend to give because they want to give, and they really don't do it for just tax purposes. As a result, it shouldn't make that much of a difference. On the other hand, for high wage earners, high net worth people, it's one of the few deductions they're allowed. So we may actually see increases in that group. But the offset is the tax rates did go down. And when tax rates go down, the benefit of a charitable contribution deduction is a little less. When tax rates went down in 86 from 70% to 28%, the charities thought they were going to get totally killed with a lower deduction, and it did not come about. So I'm expecting that a lot of this is fear as opposed to reality.
Okay. And so a couple of points there, though. I mean, certainly there is some non-zero number of givers who do give for tax purposes. Right?
Correct.
I mean, and I take the point that most people are giving because they want to give. But certainly there's a non-zero number. So is it possible then, based on what you're saying, Bert, that charities, that nonprofits could see fewer total donors but a larger average gift, given the fact that especially at the higher end of earners, this is still a good place to do that?
That's a good observation. I think that that's very possible. We're going to have to wait and see. A lot of people, you know, people give to the church not because of a charitable deduction, but because of the nature of the contribution. And for a lot of organizations, it's like that. A lot of people donate to charity and they don't itemize. I mean, we're talking about itemized deductions, but under the old law, 65-75% of the people did not itemize. That number is going to go up, but those people who didn't itemize still gave to charity.
And I think going off Bert's point, too, is especially the higher income earners who have been very generous and charitable, the nice part about the charitable contribution is it's an itemized deduction, but Kevin and I talked about alternative minimum tax where itemized deductions get added back. Charitable deductions are one of those that actually doesn't get added back when you're figuring out your alternative minimum tax, and they raised, you used to be only be able to contribute 50% of your income, now it's 60%. So I think that a fair observation is that the higher income earners are probably going to potentially give bigger gifts.
Okay, and Kevin, you're a guy with a reputation of being one of the nicest guys in town. I've heard some of your work that you do with organizations, and they appreciate that. Do you have any concern about nonprofits and charitable groups?
I mean, there's always going to be some concern there. To Bert's points, I mean, those are very valid. And to kind of go off of what Sean said on the increase in the threshold that you can contribute, that 60% is on cash contributions. So there's still going to be the opportunity if you donate appreciated stock. And then there's also for taxpayers that are over 70 and a half, there's the opportunity to contribute directly from your IRA. So I think you're going to see a big increase in that from taxpayers that are going to be taking the standard deduction going forward. You can directly contribute to a charity from your IRA, and that is non-taxable to you.
And forgive me, is that new?
That is not new. That
okay,
has
I didn't
been
think so.
In existence.
Okay. But all right. So that was a very good question that came from a listener on that, and we'll see. Let's see here. Greg says he's a new parent and wants to know about the child tax credit. He says, does it have to be claimed or is it automatic? Yeah, Doug?
Well, it's automatic in that you have to put it on your tax return. However, it's, you know, in that respect, it basically reduces your tax liability by $2,000. So it'll reduce it for up to $2,000. And if you don't owe any tax, say 700 of it offsets all the taxes that you owe, you're going to get $1,300 back.
I think Greg is simply wondering, if I don't check a certain box, do I not get the credit that's now better or higher?
That's correct.
That's correct.
Yeah. That is correct.
You have to actually claim the credit, but it's very easy to do.
Yeah.
Okay. And I guess the only little drawback is you do need to have a Social Security number for the child to be able to claim them either in the old role as a dependent or this for the credit. So most hospitals do that automatically now when a child's born, but you just want to make sure that you have a Social Security number and that you check the right box on the tax return.
It has to be a real person.
So. It doesn't have to be a real person.
My dog doesn't cut it.
Well, it just as an aside, it's just a humorous story in the sense. But in 86, when this came about that you needed the Social Security number, over a million children disappeared in this country. They just stopped being on the tax rolls.
I'm hoping that no kids actually disappeared. And what you're actually saying is that those kids never existed in the first place.
Or it was a giant alien abduction.
That's what the alien
It could
abduction.
Be, yes.
That was in 1986?
Yes.
Okay, well, so Greg, I hope that answers your question as a new dad. Good luck on your taxes. By the way, if Greg wants to do taxes on his own, you know, Bert says that's an easy one. You know, you almost can't miss claiming that one. But how simple is it to do taxes on your own these days?
I think it's, well, for us,
I'm asking CPAs
easy.
Who all want you to hire them. So, you know, this is a loaded question, but go ahead, guys.
I think the misnomer with taxes is, you know, at the end of the day, some people have very simple returns and they have the capacity to, especially with the softwares out there, do it themselves. But I think to evaluate it and whether or not they want to have assurance over them doing it right, or simply if it's going to take them 5 hours and it's going to take us 1 hour, how do they value your time? So case by case and personal preference.
Well, here's Steven on Twitter wants to know, what did the CPAs on your program think of the governor's plan to change the tax code to skirt the law? I don't know if that is exactly how the governor would describe it, but in his recent addresses, both the State of the State and his budget address, he did talk about the federal tax bill. The governor is, and in a moment, I'll let you know what other lawmakers, we reached out to lawmakers on the federal and state level, not just about SALT, but about the changes in tax policy. But we'll go around the table. Bert, what would you say to Stephen? He wants to know, what do you think of Cuomo's plan to change the taxes to skirt the law?
Well, first of all, there's two methods that states are looking at, including New York. One method is to create a charitable foundation under the state, and if you make a contribution to this, it would then be used to do things the state would normally do, fund education, roads, whatever, and then you would get a 100% charitable contribution deduction because you could itemize on charities, and then you'd get 100% credit on your state tax return for that donation. And therefore, you're a break-even, and yet you basically get a deduction. The second method is to impose a payroll tax on employers rather than on individuals' wages. And that way, an employer would be able to deduct that, and then your pay would be slightly reduced, so you'd have less taxable income, which puts you in the same place as you would have been before. It's just shifting who pays for it. That one is actually a little more difficult to do because it's maybe a little regressive rather than progressive. Some people have contracts, union negotiations. It may be actually very hard to put in place and make it work. The other method actually is something that some states have had in the past, South Carolina, Illinois, Arizona. A couple of states have programs like that. It might not be 100%, but it's something that works like that. And the IRS has allowed those. But if you go on but they're limited. So I think South Carolina is like $8 million a year for the entire state. If New York State imposes something like that, it's very possible that the IRS would challenge it because you're getting something for the donation, and that's something that's really not allowed. In other words, if you go to a charity and you give them money for the dinner that you're going to, you have to subtract the cost of the dinner because you're getting that, and you can't take a deduction for the dinner cost, only for the true charitable part. So the question is this a true charitable donation, or are you getting something in return? And I think that if Congress doesn't address it, the courts would have to address it.
By the way, just to make sure I'm clear on this, if I went to an event for $100 a plate and wanted to deduct that, I've got to figure out the cost of the dinner and deduct and not claim, so I can't claim the full $100?
That is correct. Generally, the charity will tell you right on there you know, your $400, $80.
And charities know the rules, so obviously.
Correct.
Okay, I got you. Okay. Doug, go ahead.
The point that he was making about that charitable, that was something that was brought up in California, and immediately the stuff I read on it was you're actually getting more value than the $100 or $1,000 that you're donating, because you're getting a $1,000 reduction in your taxable income. In addition to that, you're also picking up you're reducing your tax bill, so you're actually getting more than what you're contributing. Therefore, it's not going to be allowed as a charitable contribution for the mere fact that you talked about with the lunches and the dinners and stuff like that, where you deduct the portion. Well, you're really receiving more than what the contribution is.
Yeah, but to say the IRS has looked at this issue in the past, they issued a internal memorandum back in 2011 on something like this. And they basically concluded that it was okay. Now, that doesn't apply to everybody. It only applies to that one particular situation. So that's why I think that we can look at it from a logical point of view and say it really doesn't make sense. You know, like if it's too good to be true, it probably isn't. But there is some evidence that it might work. So I think there's a lot of work to be done on the specifics to see whether or not it could actually work.
All right, Sean, is this becoming political? Is the governor playing politics with this? You're like, don't ask me that. I'm going to ask you that.
Of course he is. I think that SALT's on a lot of people's minds right now, and I think that the narrative that he's trying to portray is that the government's trying to get more of New York State's tax dollars. The issue I have with it is, you know, if he took back and took a step holistically, is why are New Yorkers, why is this impacting New Yorkers so much, especially as much as he exclaims? Well, part of it is we are taxed so heavily. So I don't expect a politician to want to lower the tax rates, especially if they have a lot of programs or funding. But at the end of the day, the SALT is a product of the fact that we're taxed so high. So why don't we look into, I don't know, maybe reducing the burden for New York State taxpayers rather than trying to figure out a way to put the burden on business owners or have different ways for charitable contributions.
Just a quick explainer on some of what Sean just said there, because I know, again, contrary to what the CPAs think, this stuff is a little dry, but it's important. And if you're just joining us, when he says SALT, state and local taxes, we're talking about allowable deductions, and that has changed with federal tax policy. And what Sean is saying is that the reason that some people have needed to claim so much in terms of state and local tax deductions is because we're already taxed at a high level. And so if the federal government says you can only claim up to $10,000, not $20,000, the response of the governor is, well, that's unfair to New Yorkers. The response of the Brian Kolbs of the world, who would like to be governor, is that New York State shouldn't be taxing people so high to begin with, and that deduction doesn't hurt, or that change in SALT doesn't hurt other states in the same way it hurts us. Is that fair?
That's fair.
Okay. Now, all I'm doing is observing the landscape. I'm not taking sides here. Kevin, you want to weigh in on that?
I would agree kind of with what Sean just said. I mean, it's one of those things where trying to blame the federal government, and if you look at our state and the taxes that we pay, they are quite high. So the Department of Taxation and Finance just last week did release kind of a 40-page outline of what Cuomo was talking about, okay, what can we do to kind of mitigate these new legislative rules? And there's a lot in there, and kind of what Bert talked about, and the charitable contribution and the payroll tax. They're also talking about an unincorporated business tax like they do down in New York City. So lots of different ideas that they're throwing out there right now.
Go ahead, Bert.
Okay. And one other thing in looking at some of those items is that the New York State tax, this doesn't just affect your federal tax. In New York State, if you itemize in New York State, it copies the federal rule. So when the federal limits it, the state automatically limits it. And that's looking at that if the state doesn't do anything, they're going to be raising an extra $400 million just because of the federal change on the SALT rules. So that's one thing that the governor is actually looking, is trying to get them to change the law to retain the 2017 rules for state deductions, so that you get the full SALT deduction if you itemize in New York State on your New York State return.
All right. So let's, after our only break of the hour, we're going to work through some of what our lawmakers have had to say about this. And by the way, guys, did I read correctly that the final bill with moving the SALT deduction from $20,000 to $10,000, there were initial iterations of wiping out SALT altogether. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Yep. There was some outcry about that. And so it wasn't wiped out altogether, but it was cut in half from 20,000 to 10,000. So we're going to answer more of your questions, and we've got some responses from lawmakers just to weigh in because these guys all want to talk politics and make this super political. I'm mostly kidding. Our merry band of CPAs are here lending their expertise and answering our questions, and they're doing a great job, and we're glad they're here. Bert Speer is a CPA and tax partner at Mengel Metzger Barr. Kevin Woodworth is a CPA and manager at DeJoy, Knopf & Blood. Sean O'Brien, CPA, MBA, and consultant at Roberts Accounting. And Doug Smith, I almost called you Doug Jones. Doug Smith, Senator Smith, is a CPA MBA at Young & Company CPAs, answering more of your questions about the federal tax bill, SALT in particular, but a wide range of tax questions, and we'll get back to that in just a moment. Coming up in our second hour, the new City Cafe is open in Rochester. It's one of the truly outstanding coffee shops, but it's probably not a place that you've been to. If you've been to Fuego or Glen Edith, Joe Bean, there's so many others, but New City is certainly in that constellation. What makes it different? Part of its location, part of its whom they're hiring. The coffee's outstanding, so we'll talk about the mission next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Sean O'Brien is going to correct something I just said going into the break, and I'm glad he's going to do that. Go ahead, Sean.
So there wasn't a cap on state and local taxes. There was no $20,000 cap. The 2018 reform is just saying that now there's a cap on state and local tax of $10,000. But for 2017 tax returns, and again, this conversation is directed towards 2018, not filers filing in 2018 for 2017 tax returns.
So a year from now.
A year from now.
Okay. That's important. Thank you. Because probably everyone at this table wants to make sure everyone understands. There's probably some confusion. What's the most common question you're getting, Bert?
Am I going to get more money back?
And you always say it depends.
Well, no. At this point, it's like, well, as you said, this law applies beginning this year. So 2017, there's almost nothing in this law that changed. A few little things, but almost nothing changed for most people for their 2017. So if you had a refund, if nothing's much changed, you had a refund in 16, you should have a refund for 2017.
But when it comes to what you expect from most of the people you work with, when you sit down and really take a look at what they've got and they ask, am I going to get more back here? Am I going to benefit more or pay more? Most people will.
Most people are going to get more money back.
Okay.
But as I said, we haven't even gotten into some of the business deductions and things like that. So people who own businesses, whether it's an S corporation or whether it's a LLC or Schedule C self-employed person, those people are going to benefit much more.
All right. So here's a question from a listener named Mark. He said, what happened in the final bill to the corporate tax rate?
The corporate tax rate went down, well, to 21% flat rate. And it's important to say that it's a flat rate because everyone says, oh, corporations are going to pay less. But in reality, corporations, regular corporations that had $50,000 or less of taxable income used to only pay 15%. So for small corporations like that, their tax rate actually went up from 15 to 21%. But now it's a flat 21% for regular corporations.
So a lot of the reporting focuses on the 35 number. So
correct.
From 35, originally floated as 35 to 20, settled at 21. Is that because Senator Rubio wanted it to go from 20 to 21 to save? I believe there was some political fighting over that last 1%. Is that?
Again, it was just something that they had to hit that $1.5 trillion
okay.
number.
Okay.
And there were so many extra giveaways they had to do to get people to vote for it. They needed to raise a little more money, so they went from 20 to 21%.
But are you saying they trade horses and not everything is out of the pure?
They trade way more than horses.
Okay. It's a good way to describe it. But 21% is the new corporate tax rate, Mark. Thank you for the email on that. But I want to hit kind of what Bert is saying there, because let's make sure people understand. Why do some, currently, why do some pay 15%?
It was just the same way individuals had various brackets. It was a progressive system. Small corporations paid less. Then you paid a little more. Then you paid much more. And now they've just gone to a flat system for corporations.
Do most larger corporations expect to pay more or less now?
Way, 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 way less.
Way less. 35 to 21. But there is also, and again, you're dealing with people like me who don't really fully, you know, I don't work in this field. What you hear a lot about is that the corporate tax rate may be 35, but a lot of the big guys don't actually pay that because they can figure out ways to sort of get around that number.
Right.
No?
But those things still exist. So the 21% rate, there's still going to be extra things. So okay. The effective rate will actually be less than that with the extra depreciation deductions and write-offs and credits. Another way to put it is that that $1.5 trillion number that they were trying to hit as a under budget reconciliation, the rate reduction from 35 to 21% ate up that almost that entire thing. Everything else is just moving the chairs around and was sort of a break even on all the other deductions and rate increase items.
All right. So if you were under the impression that the previous system had a 35% corporate tax rate, but lots of ways for corporations to reduce their tax burden and many, many not paying nearly that much at 35%. If you were under the impression that now it's going to be 21%, but we're getting rid of all that extraneous deducting and that everyone's going to pay 21%, also not true.
That is not true.
Okay, so it's going to be 21% as a starting point, but still plenty will pay a lot less.
Correct.
Okay, I was going to follow up and ask you if that's fair, but none of you want to talk about that. So let's talk about some other things. I want to make sure that we let our listeners know what lawmakers have said, because I know some of our listeners did ask about the politics of this and what is going on at the state level, at the federal level. So we reached out to members of Congress, and we reached out to state representatives on this. So let's go ahead and just read the statements that were sent to us. From Congresswoman Louise Slaughter, she writes the following, quote, "I'm deeply concerned that the Republican tax cut for the wealthy and big corporations will increase taxes for 86 million middle-class and hardworking families and severely limit the state and local tax deduction that more than 120,000 Monroe County households count on. SALT previously allowed taxpayers to deduct personal property taxes as well as state income taxes. Capping SALT at $10,000 will devastate donor states like ours and the constituents that depend on this deduction," end quote. Again, guys, I don't want to get too much into the politics, but I do want to know, do you agree with her construction that the tax cut will increase taxes, again, the federal tax bill will increase taxes for 86 million middle-class and hardworking families? Is there evidence of that, yes or no?
Current evidence suggests otherwise. I think that the what she's getting at, and she's probably correct in saying the impact of this is greater to people in New York State and specifically Monroe County, in that a lot of people we've looked at might get small refunds here, where in other states they may be getting large refunds. So the tax cuts in non-large SALT states will be bigger than it will be in New York State. And there will be people that do pay more here. I mean, again, as we talked at the beginning, sure, there's going to be it's winners possible. And losers in all of this.
Okay, middle to higher income couples with no children are probably more likely to at least not get as big a benefit or potentially pay more. Doug, go ahead.
And there's parts of that I might disagree with. You have to define exactly what level of income you're talking about, because the rates have come down. But in addition to that, the brackets have also come down and expanded a little bit. So in that respect, they may have lost some deductions for SALT, but you know, those same people that are paying lots of money to New York State also maybe have seen, when you look at it, every single tax rate, with the exception of the lowest one at 10%, has come down. So from that standpoint, that some of that is going to offset the SALT deduction.
Okay. And on the note of corporate tax rate, you heard Congresswoman Slaughter's comment about that. Keith on the line wants to jump in on that. Go ahead, Keith.
Evan, I've been a small business owner for over 40 years now. Oh, my God. And only 1 year have I paid taxes, corporate tax, because I stupidly made a large deposit a couple days before the year ended and wasn't thinking. I should have just held it until the next year. But any small business owner who's got money left over, he'll just take it as payroll. You know, it's like the speed limit. The speed limit on the thruway is 65, but very rarely we ever see anybody traveling that. The same analogy applies to the corporate tax rate. Very few people end up, or very few corporations will end up paying that.
Okay. Stay there for a second, Keith. What do you guys think?
Sure.
Guys at the table?
Well, most of the small businesses I deal with are either S corporations or LLCs, so it's a flow through to the shareholder anyway. So, you know, don't need all of these playing around with salaries and things, because they're paying tax on the income. And the new law actually is more favorable, because there's a new provision that allows a 20% deduction on business income that flows through. So if you have $100,000 of income from your S corporation, you can get up to a $20,000 deduction even without itemizing. So there might be some real advantage to smaller businesses that are operating not as a C corporation, but as an S, an LLC, sole proprietor.
Okay.
And Sean? To continue Bert's point, you know, that was done to kind of combat the reduction of the corporate tax rate. Now, when we say the corporate tax rate, we're talking about entity specific. So the 21% tax, that's C corporations or an S corp filing as a C corp. So you got to be careful with, you know, if you say you're a small business, well, then you got to look at the entity structure. And if the entity structure flows through to your income, then you have that 20, you have a potential 20% deduction. There is a phase out limit. It can be a little bit more complex, but they did that in response to the dropping of the corporate tax rate.
And before I go back to Keith, I mean, we had a listener named Joel write in to say, as someone who does a lot of contract work, should I set up some kind of an S corp or other business entity? Would that save me money?
I mean, I would say, I mean, if right now he's just kind of a sole proprietor filing on a Schedule C, I mean, that pass-through deduction is going to be applicable to Schedule C's, S-Corps, partnerships. So it wouldn't be critical for him to go through all those hoops because you're going to get the deduction either way. But, I mean, there could be some planning strategies to try to maximize that.
Okay.
There may be other reasons to go from a Schedule C to an S-Corp. I mean, there's a lot of non-tax considerations for making that move. For liability protection and things like that are, you know, a lot of times considerations. It also potentially, depending on how you pay yourself, you could save yourself on FICA taxes, Social Security taxes. So those are some things that are other considerations as opposed to just straight that 20%.
Okay. Go ahead, Keith.
I'm a C Corp, so it's just like running as a, you know, I get a salary, et cetera, and there's money left over at the end of the year.
Bonus time.
I just take a bonus. And then if the company needs it to pay a bill that's due in January or something, I just lend it back and, you know, do that. And, you know, so this thing, like, all these people are going to save money by paying less corporate tax. I'll bet you the vast majority of small businesses that are C Corp are paying little, if any, corporate tax at the end of the year.
You mean currently or going forward, Keith?
Oh, currently.
Okay.
And I don't think it's... I mean, everybody I know, and I have subcontractors that are considered small business, they'll have maybe just themselves or one or two employees. They're all... you know, it's not going to change anything for them.
So it sounds like... So, Keith, am I wrong in thinking that it sounds like to you that this is sort of a no-big-deal tax bill, or what do you expect the impact for you?
Well, I think it's a no-big-deal for small businesses. I think large corporations who actually will be paying 21%, but like I think your guests have stated, some of them, when it was 35%, once you get all the deductions and the credits, weren't paying a 35% rate. I just think it's not going to affect smaller corporations. Now, again, to define a small corporation is difficult in itself.
Okay, well,
not going to affect me one way or another.
All right, Keith, thanks for the phone call. I mean, that comes in right when Carly emails the program and says, how are small businesses going to be affected by the larger, what she calls the larger corporation tax cuts, but essentially the tax bill? So Keith is saying, Keith is answering Carly's question by saying, as a small business owner, he doesn't expect much change. Is that what you guys are hearing?
Well, actually, I mean, this is an opportunity. You know, sort of as Kevin said, is to take a look at your corporate structure or your entity structure. If you're a C corporation right now, maybe now is the time to switch to an S corporation because you're taking all that money out anyway, in his case, through a bonus. You could take it out through the S corporation at a lower tax rate and get the 20%. So for many people, it might be time to make the switch to an S corporation. Unless you need to retain the cash in the company, in which case the corporate rate at 21% is still lower than the individual rate where it may be, you know, depending on your income bracket. So it's time to sit down with your numbers and your advisors and try to figure out whether or not you're actually in the right business format under the new tax law.
All right, let me read some other statements from lawmakers before we lose the hour here. Congressman Tom Reed's statement to us was this: the new tax law will not only put more money back in the pockets of hardworking New Yorkers, but it will also enhance our economy and encourage businesses to create jobs. We are already seeing the results, with over 200 companies announcing bonuses and wage increases, many of which are in our own backyard. The bill maintains $10,000 state and local tax deduction, which protects 99% of taxpayers in our district. Any statement otherwise is misinformation, end quote. That's from Tom Reed. So two things. His use of the word maintains is a little slippery there. The bill creates a $10,000 state and local tax deduction, of which, as Sean explained earlier, there previously was no limit. So I wouldn't use the word maintains, Mr. Congressman. There is now a $10,000. But to his wider point, 99% of taxpayers in his district, he says, are not affected by SALT. And I can't sit here and dispute that number. And certainly his district is one that has a lot of rural areas, a good amount of poverty. He's probably, if he's setting that number, is somewhere close to the mark, I would assume. Is that probably right? Whereas a county like Westchester, a lot more people impacted by SALT, right?
Right. Or Monroe County, or where we are, where we have some of the highest real estate taxes, as well as the New York State income tax. So I would be pretty sure the 99% number does not apply to the Rochester area. But it may be 80%, you know? So it's not like it's 2% that are unaffected. Most people still aren't going to be affected, but the ones that are going to be affected to a fairly significant amount.
Okay. Just a couple other comments. No response from Assemblyman Joe Morelli, who is the majority leader and longtime majority leader in the New York State Assembly. As I mentioned, Brian Kolb earlier, who is the minority leader of the New York State Assembly and a candidate for governor as a Republican, was critical of New York State's overall tax burdens. Mr. Kolb saying that this is a good chance for New York to look at its overall tax burden, compare it to other states, and ask why our state is impacted more negatively by the federal bill than many others. Here's Senator Rich Funke. He says, quote, while there are many parts of the federal tax reform legislation I supported, I did not support the cap on deductibility for SALT. Like President Reagan, I believe that we should cut taxes for all who pay them, regardless of where they choose to live. It's simply wrong to pit one region against another or use the tax code to benefit or hurt one region or another. That said, this action by the federal government should give all of us pause for reflection in terms of why we continue to have one of the highest tax burdens in the nation. At this point, the prudent course is not to continue to rail against Washington, but instead to step up, cut spending, and reduce the tax burden this state has imposed on working families. The governor's budget proposal raises taxes by over $1 billion. He has called the federal action an attack on New York. If that's true, what then would he call his own proposal? That's from State Senator Rich Funke. So there's a look at what's going on in terms of not just SALT, but also the response in New York State. And it's always a process to get a final budget. We'll see what comes out of Albany in response to some of this. Let's start to wrap the program with the CPAs I asked Bird earlier, what's the most common question you get? And that's am I going to pay more or less? I get that. But what do you think is the most confusing or challenging part of this for taxpayers going forward? Is there anything that stands out to you as something that could trip people up based on what's changed?
There are a lot of things in there, and I don't think we have enough time to go over them, such as you've got to be careful if you have a large mortgage not to refinance because you can actually there's actually a new limit on mortgage interest deduction, but it applies to mortgages only over $750,000. The old law used to be over $1 million or actually $1.1 million. Home equity loans, again, no interest deduction for home equity loans, where a lot of people had used that to help finance college or buy cars or vacations and thought, well, at least I get a tax deduction, and that tax deduction will be gone starting 2018.
Okay. Doug.
Oh, by the way, what you're hearing about is what the law passed by Congress is. The biggest part about this that nobody has any idea about is what rules is the IRS going to implement. When it comes down to it, when push comes to shove, when next year's tax returns are being prepared, it's not necessarily going to be what the politician said. It's going to be how the IRS elects to implement the laws. It's going to be the critical issue. It's, that's going to be the biggest thing. We don't have any idea, and the IRS isn't even sure how to implement it because they're having a tough enough time supporting this year's tax filing, so it probably is not even going to hit the radar until the end of tax filing season.
Okay. Kevin Woodward.
Yeah, I think to build off what Bert said earlier, it's really important to consult with someone to really come up with the best planning strategies for you from an individual perspective and probably more importantly from a business perspective. So going forward, I mean, there could be opportunities to accelerate deductions or hold off depending on where you are and a given threshold. So you really need to pay attention to those things and consult with someone to make sure that you're really being as tax efficient as you can.
Sean O'Brien.
I think the one of the biggest things that's going to impact people for 2018, we're already in there, is, and especially for small business owners, because Rochester has a number of them, is the meals and entertainment deduction is no longer allowed. So I think that there's going to be strategies to kind of mitigate that. But I have had a lot of questions with people who take out clients for dinners or take them out for, you know, golf or something like that. And now whether you bucket it in marketing, that might be a particular solution. But that's been a big hot topic, is meals and entertainment no longer allowed.
That's going to be very interesting to see how people, you know, if that kind of cuts the faucet or if they do try to repurpose as marketing, I guess. But really interesting. I appreciate that. Our thanks to Sean O'Brien, a CPA, MBA, and consultant at Roberts Accounting. Thank you, Sean. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being the fact checker of the panel, too, by the way.
No problem.
No misinformation today. Kevin Woodworth, CPA and manager at DeJoy, Knopf & Blood. Great having you, Kevin. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Doug Smith, CPA, MBA at Young & Company, CPAs. Doug, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And Bert Spear, CPA and tax partner at Mengel Metzger Bar. Bert, thank you very much.
Thanks. It's been fun.
All right. Short break. More connections coming up.